Jack O'Donnell, this was 100 years ago. Why would anybody care that there was once a governor of New York State who was not only impeached, but convicted and removed from office?
Well, I think there's a couple things about this William Sulzer that are interesting to us today. I mean, the first is how relevant some of the same issues are. A lot of the impeachments circles around campaign finance and being above board with campaign contributions and who's funding the people who are in charge. That's an issue that we still see today. But I also think there's a lot of lessons here about putting politics over policy. You know, a lot of these folks decide to do the bidding of Tammany Hall rather than maybe do what's right for New York State. And some of them paid a price for that. And I think there's a lesson in today's politics in Albany and in Washington. But I also think William Sulzer's a fascinating story. This is a guy who did a lot for New York. He was Speaker of the Assembly when we outlawed imprisonment for debt. He was a member of Congress for a number of years, created the United States Department of Labor. Then as governor, creates some of the first prevailing wage legislation and does a lot of sort of progressive things that help shape New York and sort of are the forerunners of Al Smith and the New Deal and have an impact on everything in America today.
But clearly this was a different day in New York politics. To say it was completely corrupt probably isn't completely accurate, but it was thoroughly corrupt, and it was downstate and Tammany Hall and Brooklyn Democratic corruption, and upstate mostly it was Republican corruption, and the great fight here in Erie County between William H. Fitzpatrick and Fingy Connors for control of the Democratic Party not long after Grover Cleveland. This is the same but different.
Well, it's certainly different. You don't have the same party structure. You don't have that level of things. So there are parallels, but yes, there's a lot that's very different. And New York's a different place. But some of those lessons are eternal. You know, personal ambition, personal success, political power over your constituents' views and what's best for them. And that's a fight that I think you still see today. People decide, elected officials have to decide what's more important.
But that's the old Jeffersonian argument. Are you elected to represent the exact views of your constituents, or are you elected to demonstrate the best judgment possible about the issues?
Well, that's part of it, and that certainly is that argument, Mike. But I think the other question is, are you going to put your ambition first? Is it more important that you're reelected so you can do the right things in the future, or is it more important to do the right thing and maybe not get reelected? And are you responsible to those voters or to the people who paid you to talk to those voters?
But you work in Albany. You're now a lobbyist, but you've been on staff down there, and I have yet to meet an elected public official who doesn't think the republic will be diminished slightly if I get defeated.
Well, there's levels of balance for all these things, and where is that line? And I think that's some of the stuff you see. I mean, one of the things that was fascinating to me about this story, are some of the central characters. You've got a guy like Al Smith and Robert Wagner. Smith is the Speaker of the State Assembly when Sulzer is impeached. Wagner is the President Pro Temp of the Senate and part of the Court of Impeachment. These guys are Tammany lieutenants, big part of the Tammany machine, as Sulzer had been before he's elected. And, they end up as people who do great things and are, really giants in New York State history. So you've got to balance those things. But I don't think you can understand those people. I don't think you can understand New York State history without understanding all the different facets of it. And this is a big part of that.
That's the interesting thing, of course. After Sulzer is removed from office, he comes back to Albany, reelected. But he just is almost Soviet-style edited out of New York State history.
For years, there's nothing about William Sulzer, and that's what drove me, to do this research and to ultimately write this book, was the fact that you would hear these stories about other folks, Alan Hevesy, Elliot Spitzer, folks who are almost impeached, and the conversation and the newspaper articles say, well, gee, they'd be the first to be impeached since William Sulzer. But then when I went to find more about William Sulzer, the last book about William Sulzer is from 1937. And most of what happened back then is, you know, it is so skewed. Either, you know, Sulzer is the saint, he's the guy who's willing to take on the bosses, or, you know, he's so corrupt that no one could ever have trusted him. And there was nothing that really tried to balance those two views. And so that's one of the things that, you know, I try to accomplish in this book, because, you know, I think the Sulzer story is not just about politics, but it's about human nature. You know, he gets there with Tammany, helps Tammany as his friends. I mean, this is a story of betrayal on a couple different levels. Does he betray Tammany? Does Tammany betray him? And are they both betraying the people of New York?
One of the interesting things about Sulzer and his time is that when he went out to try to save himself and to save his issues against Charlie Murphy and the bosses, the public was really interested. I think too often today the public assumes, they're all crooks.
Well, that's one of the things that's really exciting is how the public in different levels gets engaged in this. And they did love, you know, Sulzer did well, and he was reelected to the assembly afterwards because he was, you know, he styled himself as the only one who was willing to take on these bosses. And that brought people to his cause. But at the same time, there are a lot of folks who were indebted to Tammany. I mean, Tammany Hall was the folks who you know, helped these immigrants become citizens, helped them get fed, helped them get jobs, helped them become part of society. Of course, they were doing it because they wanted their votes. But, you know, it made a difference in these people's lives. And Tammany and the Tammany politicians were speaking to them. So it's an interesting contrast.
And certainly Sulzer came out of that.
Sulzer absolutely comes out of that. He wouldn't have been elected to the assembly, to Congress, or as governor without Tammany Hall and without Silent Charlie Murphy, who personally chooses him to run for governor in 1912. So he owed his assent to those folks.
I think people may have read about the bosses and the machines when they were in school maybe long ago and have never read a book like Plunkett of Tammany Hall. How thoroughly corrupt government in all levels and in all sections of New York was.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see. And it's not, of course, it's not just Tammany Hall. Tammany Hall is the most famous and perhaps the most successful. But at the same time, there's some conversation in the book about the Republican boss at the time, about some different machines. You know, there are machines in Albany and, as you mentioned, here in Buffalo fighting for control. One faction allied with Tammany Hall, one aligned against. You know, it really is back and forth, but it comes down to that political power.
When William Sulzer was impeached, the formal process, there were great legal issues as to whether they could do it.
Yeah, the impeachment was fascinating for a couple reasons. One is this is the big national story. It's not that long in public memory after Andrew Johnson had been impeached, you know, after Lincoln's death. And so, you know, this was a big deal out there. But there were a lot of questions about Sulzer. You know, the campaign finance issues were issues that actually had happened before he was elected governor. Could he be removed from office for something that happened before he was in office? And at the same time, the impeachment itself happened during a special session of the legislature. And there were a lot of questions on whether that was constitutional. And so the folks who appear on both sides in this trial are some of the most famous New Yorkers and Americans at the time. The leader for the prosecution, for the impeachment managers, is a guy named Alton Parker, who in 1904 had been the Democratic nominee for president, had been chief judge of the New York Court of Appeals. I mean, these were major figures.
It's, again, Parker is an example. The way people in those days moved between politics and the bench and back and forth and is interesting in itself. And certainly some of the members of the Court of Appeals who allowed the impeachment to go forward must have really held their noses as they came up with their decisions, because some of the judges were willing to say, no, you can't do it. And other judges, they were clearly just anxious to keep Charlie Murphy happy and get Sulzer out of there.
Exactly. Keep in mind at this point, you know, the Court of Appeal justices are also elected statewide. So they've got to run. They needed Tammany backing or the Republican machine backing to win. But it is interesting. The chief judge, who was fairly well respected at the time as a jurist, he votes against removing William Sulzer from office, but with a long speech about how terrible he thinks William Sulzer is and these acts are and how bad they are, but at the same time saying he shouldn't be removed from office for them.
One of the things about Sulzer that's fascinating in a modern context is the way in the course of this he throws his wife under the bus trying to cover for himself.
Well, I do think one of the things that comes out that's really sort of sad here is how hard William Sulzer tries to blame everyone else. In the middle of the night, right before the vote on impeachment, you know, they send a message to the legislature saying, no, my wife did it the whole time. It was never my, I never know anything about it. Of course, the evidence shows otherwise. The letters are addressed to him, and it goes on and on.
And, of course, Wall Street money became an issue where he could just call a guy and the guy sent $10,000 in cash over and off the books and it was in cash and it seemed almost Watergate.
Well, Sulzer goes out of his way to cultivate this man of the people image, this plain Bill Sulzer. So he's hiding all these contributions from Wall Street. I mean, $10,000 in 1912 is a heck of a lot of money today. But he's also going out of the way to hide money from brewer, you know, the breweries and liquor distributors, a lot of folks that are going to make it seem like he's not just plain old Bill.
The public watch this apparently with fascination. You have a section in the book talking about the coverage out of state in various papers when Sulzer was removed from office. Politics was more of a popular game in those days.
Well, there's a lot more folks who are following this closely, and part of that is because you have the number of newspapers you have is a myriad, you know, compared to what we have today. And so you had these papers, you know, competing for the public, and the public was engaged. You know, a lot of folks who really paid attention to this, the amount of letters that go back and forth, you know, keep going, Bill, we're for you, Bill, or get rid, you know, throw the bum out. It's fascinating.
And, of course, there were newspaper publishers involved in this.
Well, William Randolph Hearst, who's the publishing magnate, you know, owns countless papers across the country.
Of Citizen Kane fame.
Of Citizen Kane fame, who also was a politician. I mean, he had been a member of Congress from a district next to William Sulzer's, and he was very stridently anti-Tammany. He'd wanted to be governor and senator, and Tammany wouldn't support him. And, you know, so he's part of this. He and Sulzer sort of basically cook up a scheme where, you know, they're going to get together and take control of the state Democratic Party from Tammany. And who knows, one of them will end up in the White House is the goal.
When you decided to write the book, how easy is it to write about something 100 years ago, about a governor that people remember only because he was impeached?
Well, writing the book for me was actually a lot of fun. As someone who does spend his time in Albany and interacts with a lot of legislators and the governor and their staffs, you know, it was a lot of fun to write about people 100 years ago and what they were doing as opposed to having to deal with the stress of today's.
In some ways, the stress isn't very different. Sulzer says, well, the public supports me. You know, today you go out and get a focus group and it says the public supports you. Well, they may not, but Are the records there? Did somebody keep a file of the case? You know, you mentioned in the book that you finally found a transcript of the trial, but it wasn't easy to do.
Well, some of the findings, some of the documents was a difficult task. I was able to eventually find the trial transcripts, which was, you know, several thousand pages of dusty old, you know, minute by minute, which was fascinating reading for someone like me. But also I based a lot of this on newspaper reports. You know, the like we talked about, the number of newspapers that were out there made it a lot easier. But the challenge with the newspapers is that there was no attempt at impartiality. Really, these newspapers were, you know, they loved him or they hated him. It's a lot like trying to get all your – find out what's really happening today watching MSNBC and Fox. You know, they have a viewpoint. They're not ashamed about that viewpoint. And that's what the newspapers were. So trying to find the truth in between that was a difficult task.
Now, you're a lawyer and a lobbyist, but you're also a person who benefited from a transplant. And you mention in the book that any profits from this are going to go to transplants. Why?
Well, really, without my liver transplant, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't have written this book. I wouldn't have gotten married. I wouldn't be a lawyer. I wouldn't be a lobbyist. And I wouldn't be here. So really, without that gift, the gift that some family at a difficult time in their life decided to make, you know, I wouldn't be here. And I there are something like 17 people in America who die every day waiting for a transplant. So I just wanted to say thank you to that family that did that for me. And if we can raise some money, if people buy the book, you know, hopefully a few other people get that chance. And who knows what they'll do.
Thank you, Jack O'Donnell. We've been speaking with Jack O'Donnell, author of Bitten by the Tiger, a look at New York politics 100 years ago when the governor of New York was impeached and removed from office. I'm Mike Desmond, WBFO News.